Recently, I've been reflecting on aging bodies. This is something everybody here has, right? We're all at our own age, but the aging goes in one direction, right? I certainly more recently, I've had some physical pain. My wife has had some physical pain. My body just isn't what it used to be, and I think you know what I mean. Reduce physical capacity, the belly starts to grow, there are more aches and pains, injuries seem to happen faster. Gravity really seems to take a toll over time, right? The body starts to sag. This is all a natural process. What is this teaching us? What is available for us to learn from the body? In a Dhamma perspective, in terms of the Dhamma, I really think the body offers an opportunity to open to so much of the Dhamma, really almost the whole of the Dhamma. It is an opportunity to open to it at its own pace. We're not gonna quote from Philip, we're practicing practice. We're not practicing results, right? We get to make our genuine, our sincere effort with our practice by through our formal meditation time, through reflecting on Dharma outside of the formal meditation time. But we don't get to decide what the results are going to be or over what time frame. So we do get to open to the Dhamma and whatever insight may come through reflecting on having a body. But we don't just don't get to decide what we're going to learn from it and over what time frame. And if you feel like you haven't learned much from the body in terms of the Dhamma, you can always incline in that direction and learn more. I think a good place to start when talking about the body is with the three characteristics that the Buddha talked about, the three marks of existence. That existence is that all conditioned things are impermanent, unsatisfactory, and subject to change. Actually, there's one, the unconditioned is not subject to change. That's the only item that is not subject to change. That, of course, is Nibbana. Nirvana, the complete awakening that happens. But other than that, all other things are said to be conditioned, and they're said to be subject to these three characteristics. Anicca, impermanence. Anicca, the fact that experience that things are always changing. And we don't have much of a say over what direction it's going in. You know? Goes in one direction, and that's it. The second characteristic, dukkha, it's experiences, conditioned experiences, unsatisfactory. Dukkha most commonly is translated as suffering. Some people translate it as unsatisfactory. Oftentimes in the discourses. This kind of trope in the discourses will be the Buddha referring to something as being, or to conditioned experience as being impermanent, unsatisfactory, and subject to change. Anicca, dukkha, and anatta. And that dukkha, many people translate it as suffering, and it does include that. I was on a retreat with Venerable Anālio. I think I've shared this here before. And somebody was asking him about why don't you say suffering for dukkha? He said, and he picks up his water cup that he has there. He says, "This cup is dukkha, but it's not suffering." Right? So it is, but it is unsatisfactory. It's going to break down over time. It can't lead, it's not, it, nothing that is conditioned can provide lasting happiness for us. He also said, I took his course on mindfulness, on Satipatthana, Which is a wonderful course if you haven't taken it already. If you've done a little bit, you probably, it may be helpful if you've done a little bit of study of the discourses. But if you've done a little bit of that, that can be a really valuable class to take. And in that class, one of the things he said is the body is a near constant source of pain. And partially I was like, whoa, slow down. Let's not generalize here. And it's like, no. That's actually, there is a lot of truth to that. And I'm not sure if he said it was a constant source of pain or a near constant source of pain. But I can remember I was assisting on a day long several years ago, and I was doing question and answers with they had divided up the group, and a bunch of the group, people with more experience, stayed with the main teacher, and then me and the other assistant, I think it was just one other assistant that day, went with the kind of some of the newer folks, and we were just kind of going back and forth. One, the first question would be for me, the second for him, and back and forth. I was with Will Kabat-Zinn. And on one of his turns, someone asked about establishing a daily practice. And this person said they had plenty of time and they could actually meditate for a long time. They could do it for long. How long should they sit for? And Will pondered for a moment. And he said, you know, it's great if you can sit for long enough for discomfort to arise. I thought that is a very wise answer. You know, normally, how much of our lives do we set up around avoiding discomfort? You could say that's really at the core of so much of our lives. How do we avoid discomfort? I'll have a little tea now, or I'll pick up my phone and send a text to my friend, or have a call, or go for a little walk, or, you know, whatever it is. Not that we don't have to do these things. I'm not saying that these things do not make up a life. They do. But the way in which we can bounce from thing that we want to thing that we want, from moving away from this discomfort and towards that thing that we want, and back and forth over and over, can be really astonishing. And yes, we don't need to sit too long without moving for discomfort to arise. With practice, that amount of time does get, in my experience, both with myself and with others, that amount of time may get longer, definitely. But if we sit still for long enough, discomfort arises. We can also learn over time to struggle with that discomfort less and less. And if you don't believe this, just say you're gonna, do an experiment after this, or even right here in this, thing. Decide you're not going to move. Not from a place of being rigid or harsh or trying to outlast anything. Out of curiosity, out of openness, out of just wanting to see. Another definition of dukkha, is sickness, aging, and death. Right? This is part of our inheritance. No one escapes these three, right? There's one teacher, I can't remember his name. I think he actually taught maybe more in Advaita or Hindu tradition or something, but he taught a lot in prisons. One of his sayings, maybe even the name of the title of his book, was "No one gets out alive." The third characteristic, anatta, the atta, that sense of a self, and anatta, which the Buddha said was a characteristic. This is seeing the manifestations of the ego as it arises, and just seeing the impersonal nature of that. Dana De Palma calls this, refers to it as sweet ego. Philip talks about, Philip Moffat used to talk with us about the committee, the internal committee that we have, right? All those voices inside telling us, do this, no, do that. You know, they each have their own agenda. or the ego, whatever you want to call it. As we start to see this ego and how it manifests, we can start to see the impersonal nature of it, see it as just this manifestation is coming. Another thing I've been talking about bodies, taking the body personally. On one level, it is our body. My body is mine and not yours, and each of you has a body. But it's almost like we just have a long-term lease, you know? The lease is going to expire at some point, and we'll have to give it back, you know? Philip, at one point in time, he was referring to the body as a biological spacesuit, which is really interesting because, you know, this is the only way through these sense organs and this physical body and the mind heart, that's the only way through which we know any experience during this lifetime. That is it. And yet we've constructed this whole thing. I'm Art, you're Corey or Mary or Charles Lee or whoever, right? And that's who I am. I wouldn't recommend becoming Art. That has some serious drawbacks, so be careful about that. But we can start to look at this more closely. You know, talking about the committee or the sweet ego, that personality, there is nothing to get rid of, nothing to fix. It's going to go through its own course corrections. Many of you have had some sense of that in your practice. Or you find a deeper, a more fulfilling place to kind of for to be at the center of your life, right? You do not have to get rid of the personality or the ego. You certainly do not need to belittle it or diminish it or scare it or anything like that. No destruction called for or wanted. So just notice if you want, if at some point you're getting irritated and you notice that and you want to get rid of that part, just notice that the part that wants to get rid of that is just another committee member. That's all it is. It's just another manifestation of the ego trying to control things. And you can respond to that just by seeing that, or you can use, you know, Dana will say, "Oh, sweetheart," when she sees those manifestations of the ego, the sweet ego. Joseph Goldstein, another longtime teacher in our tradition, "It's okay." That's what he would say. "It's okay." So love that part or love those parts up. So often we get reactive. The cause of dukkha, the second noble truth, we get reactive to pleasant, to unpleasant, and to neither pleasant nor unpleasant. We get hooked there, and then we start to take things personally. Over time, the opportunity to be with experience, as it is, presents itself over and over and grows. And we can work with this. We can work with this feeling tone, this pleasant, this unpleasant, and neither. And work with that over time and just notice that repeatedly. And as we do, the sense with which we take that to have some kind of absolute truth starts to diminish. We start to see through it bit by bit. So we can see those three characteristics in the body, and we can go deep with any of those three characteristics. Okay. The body also gives us an opportunity to practice with the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, the first loving kindness or kindness or goodwill, metta. Can we meet our bodies as they are with a feeling of goodwill, with kindness, compassion? I think it was in Sharon Salzberg in one of her books, defined compassion as the quivering of the heart in the face of someone's pain. Can we hold ourselves, hold this body, our pain, our losses, our reduced physical ability, sickness, injury, can we hold that with compassion? Equanimity. Actually, I kind of jumped over sympathetic joy, joy in the good fortune of others. Can we take delight in others and in their vitality? And younger people often, can we do that without getting caught in comparing, judging, fixing, anything like that? What comes to mind for me is we have a couple neighbors across the street. They're 2 and a half and 4 and a half, heading off for a bike ride this morning, and they have kind of the scooter bikes that you use your feet to push yourself along, and just taking delight in that. The fourth of the Brahma Viharas, the divine abodes, equanimity. A sense of spacious ease, a sense of not getting rocked by this body and its aging nature. So the aging body gives us plenty of opportunity to practice it, which is a good thing because we're here, right? And we've got this body, and it's going to be getting, it is aging, that relentless process. Going to read an excerpt from a book by Guy Armstrong, one of the Spirit Rock teachers. This book called Emptiness, A Practical Guide for Meditators. Whoops. Okay, the body, we call it me, in quotes, but it's just a phenomenon of physical nature. It has had its own life quite apart from our conscious volition. It formed years ago as a single cell from the union of one person's sperm and one person's egg. That cell divided, then those cells multiplied and specialized for 9 months in the womb. Since emerging into the wider physical world, the body has been nourished by milk and food, water and air, and has grown bigger, stronger, and older. And here we find it today, shaped and colored the way it has been by our genes and other natural forces, and we lay claim to it as self. We may feel a lot of pride in our body if others consider it attractive, or we may feel shame if they don't. We may wish that our body were taller or shorter, darker or fairer, lighter boned or broader in the shoulders. But none of that was ever up to us. I didn't even get a vote. The body was birthed and lived its own physical life according to its own physical laws. The basic body we have was never under our control. Of course, its appearance has been influenced by our choices in diet, exercise, and health care. But these variations are minor compared to what we're given. I had the good fortune to practice as a monk for some time in the monastery of Ajahn Buddhadasa, one of the great forest masters of the last century in Thailand. Living close to nature was integral to the way he learned and taught. He put it this way: this body came out of nature, is part of nature, never departed from nature, and belongs to nature. So give it back to nature. That will be a big relief for you. We are caught in this delusion of selfhood as if we were in control, as if we had some control. We have, and it's not true that we have no control. We do have some control, but the amount of control that we have is relatively minor. So just noticing that and we're not in control, the remember that impermanent, unsatisfactory, and subject to change. My understanding is that at the time of the Buddha, if something was subject to change, then it couldn't be self, because if it was yourself, then it would be under your control. So this could be another topic that could be open to exploration for you. What are the things where you notice that you're, what are the things that you actually can control, and what can't you control with the body? Okay. We are going to have some breakout groups now, if we can. Barbara and Bill, you're welcome to stay in the same breakout group if you like. And I have a couple questions for you to reflect on. You don't have to get them perfect, okay? But what's one thing your body teaches you about the Dhamma, or Dharma, however you prefer? And what's one Dharma lesson from the body that you, either that you have missed in daily life, or that you're interested in working with more? And we're going to be in groups of three. And I think we'll give you maybe 8 minutes per group. So each person is going to have 2 minutes to speak. I think there's usually a timer, at least in some devices, there's a timer in the upper window. So you should see that as a countdown. And/or try to keep do the count for yourselves. And then we will come back in just a few minutes. Yeah, welcome back. So I'm interested to hear from anyone who would like to share your own experience or an area of exploration for you or one that you've noticed.
I can say something, Art.
Yes, Nancy, please.
Some of you knew me during this period. There was a time many years ago now when I nearly died, and I was in the emergency room with no blood pressure, no pulse, and I was in agonizing pain. But in the moments when I wasn't struggling with the pain, I remembered my meditation practice and to be present. I wanted to be present with what happened when I died, and just really to be present at in those moments. So it was actually beautiful for me to bring that awareness and that presence into that kind of an experience.
Wonderful. That's why we practice, so we can fall back on it at times like that. Or one reason to practice, I suppose. Anybody else want to share? Don't have to, no obligation. Yeah, Mary?
I find that as I practice things, there's a part that we're reading the book, the Guy Armstrong's book, and there's parts that you read and you think about it, and then but it stays conceptual, and then there's other things that really drop into your body, and your body lets you know that you've got it, and so my body knows dukkha pretty well from minor irritation. I was just watching myself sometimes when I like the. That undercurrent of irritation, which is just that little dukkha, and it's not huge, but it's. But I'm really noticing like the subtle levels of it, And then just the major things that happen in your body and just feeling like, you know, where's this tension and there's that. So that's really, yeah, the dukkha parts there and the whole and Nietzsche. Yeah, I see everything's changing and all that's going on. And then I said, the one thing to work, I still need to work on is the whole anatta. I mean, I understand it conceptually, beautifully. Yes, it's just really fine. And I've gotten better at not taking things personally, but you know, I just really feel like Mary Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, and I know that the personality is not going to get enlightened, that's all going to be gone. It's going to let go, and it's just like I vacillate between this idea of the ultimate reality and then the relative reality of my life. And how like sweet ego is needed to function, but not to have it be in the driver's seat. And that's really a huge for me, the huge place to be working on. And for me, the biggest way is to like, how mindful can I be in this particular moment?
Right.
So, and that's, I mean, I, you know, I hope Nancy that I'm as lucid as you were.
Yeah.
Cause that's something that I would like to. So yeah. That's a huge part of my practice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Just seeing when Mary's there in a big way, as Donald talks about, like the thinning of the self. When is Mary there as this big Mary? And when is it really just kind of fine? It's like, oh, I could even set Mary down right now. There's times when there's no sense of Mary being here. So just noticing that, the freedom that's available there. Corey, did you have a question or comment?
No, but I could reflect too that, you know, the body is just essential for me. Whenever I forget that the body is a doorway, that's when things go awry. You know, it just really, it's essential for me every day to get in my body and to, and when it takes a while, you know, it takes a while, the head space goes and then I come back to the body and then I do do all the elements and all that. And that's really great. And then I focus on like the aggregate, like this is all just a bunch of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not even like a body. It's like, you know, skin and bones and blood and, you know, things that change and every cell changes all the time. And then I can really start to feel like, oh yeah, well, why am I so attached to it? I mean, it's not even a thought. It's just like, oh, I can kind of let go of it a little bit then. I don't have to be so attached. And then, it helps, as I was saying in the group, when I finally get in the body really well, then it clears the brain of all that stuff. So then insight can arise. But whenever I go hunting for, you know, insight intellectually, forget about it.
Yes. Mary Page.
I just want to say, for me, the body, particularly as a resource for dealing with restlessness or dealing with thoughts, it's an incredible resource. It'll just take me out of the kind of, you know, restless mind and into my body. And it's like such a comfort, such a place of respite. And for whatever reason, I can stay focusing on my body much longer than I can do even on the breath. So I love it. I'm really appreciative. And I don't mean I love the body, this whole body. I don't know if I love this whole body, but I love the internal experience of it.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah. Yeah, that's, I don't know like what percentage of people that may be true for, but it's certainly true for me. For me, the body is a place of greater, if I want to develop that kind of groundedness and steadiness of mind and stillness of mind and heart, the body is, for me, is more powerful than the breath. I think we may be in a minority, Mary, but we're not alone. We're not alone there. Okay. So we have just a little bit of time left. before I hand it over to Jane Rawlinson for the Metta cards. But I just want to read you a brief excerpt from an article in The Inquiring Mind from 2011 by a woman named Nancy Bardacki. Actually, I don't know if it's Bardacki, Bardacki, I don't know. Okay. We're born on the in-breath and we die on the out-breath. And that's literal, right? We've got a certain number of breaths in between. As we observe the breath in the body, we see how our physical being is not solid or fixed. It is alive and changing in every moment. If all goes well, the body that first forms in the womb will grow, be born, keep growing, possibly reproduce, sicken, age, and eventually die. The body does this all on its own. We don't have to intentionally grow our fingernails when we're in the womb any more than we can intentionally will ourselves to attain sexual maturity or stop our organs from wearing out. The body mind wears out, may get sick, and eventually dies. In fact, sickness and death can happen anywhere in the cycle. Each passage of the body involves gain and or loss, the passage from birth and being born, infancy to childhood to adolescence and older age. Each passage of the body involves gain and or loss. As we know from the second noble truth of the Buddha, the more we are attached to the preceding phase, the more we suffer. Our challenge is to let go and be with things as they are. The passages of life continue, inextricably propelled by the changes in the body, until we die. Will we experience them with attachment and contraction, or with expansion, acceptance, and letting go?